Well, hi everyone, and welcome to another episode of Tim Topham TV, the piano teaching podcast. It's so great to have you with me, and it's so great to receive so much positive feedback about the podcast and the great sort of ideas and tricks and tips that people are getting from it. It really means a lot, and it's fantastic as I've been reading the iTunes reviews as well. So please keep them coming. If you could spare just a couple of minutes is all it takes to head to timtopham.com/iTunes, and all the instructions are there step by step to guide you in how to leave a review on iTunes. It would be so great if you could do that, because it does help with rankings and getting my show better known. So thanks again for all your support. I do understand that there's a lot of different podcasts you could be listening to, and there's not a lot of time in your days to do it. So I really value the fact that you are listening to mine. Today we're talking about motivation, and it's a solo episode, so I'm not interviewing anyone today. It's just me you've got to put up with for the next little while, but it won't be quite as long as some of our other episodes. As usual, I'll put some show notes at timtopham.com/episode15, and you'll be able to get any links of things that I mentioned today there. So I'd actually want to talk about motivation, because I was listening to a podcast. It was actually a podcast for sales and marketing, so a kind of entrepreneurial podcast, and I like listening to those. One of the things they were talking about in there got me thinking about piano teaching and our motivation to change our methods and to seek new ideas. And what this podcast talked about was a little, it was kind of a parable almost, but the concept was a potential person who wanted to learn about sales was asked by his or her mentor that to go out into the street and sell 10 apples for £2. It was an English show, £2 each to as many strangers as you can sort of find in the street. And most of the people who responded to this were like, oh no, I don't think I could do that. I'm a bit of an introvert. I'm too shy. I can't do that sort of thing. All too hard. And so the mentor then changed the construct a little bit and said, okay, well now what about if your child is sick and needs, let's say, a new kidney or two or whatever it is? How might that change your motivation to go out and sell those 10 apples if you knew that selling 10 apples for £2 each to random strangers in the street would save your child's life? And of course, the response is simple. You would do anything, wouldn't you? You would sell 200 of them if you had to. Nothing kind of matters anymore apart from doing what you have to and getting motivated to save your child's life. Now, that sounds all kind of very extreme, and I don't want to start off on a kind of odd note, but it got me thinking about what motivation there is for teachers to change. Because we all know teachers who kind of do their own thing, live in a bit of a bubble, don't attend conferences or workshops, they don't read blogs, they don't interact on Facebook groups. Many perhaps have been teaching for many, many years in the same way, teaching the same old pieces to the same old kind of demographic of kids, and probably having about the same old effect. So why is it that we do need to change? My, of course, as you know, anyone that listens or reads my blog knows that I am someone who continually pushes myself to try new things, explore ideas, and change up the way I'm doing things in positive ways. And so I was thinking about why it is that piano teachers need to change, or in fact, do we need to change, or can we just keep on doing the same thing that we've been doing for however long we continue teaching for? Of course, the answer to that is yes, you could. But my golly, there is so much you're going to be missing out on, and there's so much your kids are going to be missing out on, and chances are the way society is going at the moment, you could well be left with a very empty studio if you choose to do that in, let's say, 10 years. So why the need for change? Well, society is changing. There is no doubt that kids today are different to how they were even 10 years ago, even when I was a kid. The way kids are brought up is vastly different. The amount of activities that they're doing is vastly different. And the impact of technology on kids, on parents, on everything has had a monumental effect worldwide in just about every industry. I mean, just look at what Uber has done for the taxi industry Look at what iTunes did for CDs, or what Netflix is doing for DVDs. I mean, the answers are obvious. What's technology going to do for piano teaching? What's it going to do to it? Is it good stuff? Is it bad stuff? Are you going to let things happen to you and act or react as you need to, or are you going to be proactive in actually making sure you're ahead of the game, or at least keeping up? One of the quotes that I wrote in one of my previous articles about online training was, if you are serious about your teaching, you should be striving for continual self-improvement. And I guess that is my own mantra and the whole reason that I spend time doing this podcast, writing blog posts, and sharing all my ideas as far and wide as I can. I believe in self-improvement, and I believe that as teachers, we should be the best learners there are. If you're not learning something new and you're teaching, then I think you're missing one half of the equation. So why is it that so few teachers make a commitment to change? And I think I'm probably preaching to the converted when I talk about this kind of thing on my podcast. So I hope that if you know of teachers who are out there who could do with a little motivation to get busy and explore new ideas and just break out of perhaps a little bit of a comfort zone, then maybe you could send them to this episode and get them to have a listen. Because I think there are, in reality, far fewer teachers who actually are actively engaged in professional development than there are who don't. Did that make sense? I'm not sure I got that around the right way. I think very few teachers do it in the big scheme of things. Of course, it's very hard to know how many teachers actually do anything, because we don't have statistics, because it's an unregulated industry and there is no formal kind of barrier that you've got to cross to enter. It's very hard to tell how many teachers there are in the world teaching piano, that is, or even Australia. And so therefore, when you get, let's say, 200, 300, 400, 500 at a conference, what percentage of the actual piano teaching world is that? It's anyone's guess, really, isn't it? But I'm going to make the assumption that I think far fewer teachers attend to their professional development regularly than they should, definitely. So why is it so hard? Well, I guess the first thing is that perhaps there's no time. And changing ideas and trying new things takes time. Listening to this podcast takes time. Reading blog posts takes time. Trying new apps takes time. I understand. Finding the time to do these things can be tricky. And sometimes when you've been teaching for many, many years, it probably gets harder and harder to make change. So in that regard, young teachers and teachers who haven't been teaching for too long, and I'm in that category, we're probably at an advantage because we haven't kind of got set in our ways of doing things. So it doesn't matter if we throw out a whole method that we've been doing, let's try something new. It's a bit easier than perhaps it is for teachers who have been teaching for a very long time. That said, I've had plenty of great responses from teachers who have done my Teaching Pop Piano course, who have had no idea about pop music at all, who are classically trained and well into their 60s and have been teaching for many years, who are giving a lot of those ideas a go and having a fantastic time in the process. Not just seeing their kids enthralled and engaged, but also their own personal development. They're having fun, they're trying new things. So, you know, teaching for a long time, as long as you're in the right mindset, shouldn't be an issue. Of course, another reason people might be anti-change is that they feel that what they're doing is good enough. And perhaps if you've got a thriving full studio, you could totally be thinking that same way. And you know what? Perhaps that's okay. But I would still be saying that there are always things you can learn from other people. And that's why I'd be saying get to some of these online training events or get to conferences, because if you can't learn something new yourself because you've got the amazing busiest studio and you know everything, then you can start sharing some of your own ideas. And I think that is the thing I've got the most out of by running my blog and this podcast, is just getting my ideas out there. You get given so much support back, so I encourage everyone to do that. Maybe people are in their comfort zone, and I think that's a very easy place to get into. You know, you've been teaching for a while. Perhaps you've got a spouse who brings in, you know, a good income. So if you lose a few students, it's not too much of a problem. It might just be a hobby for you. And in that way, you know, it's quite comfortable just doing a few things on the side. So I can understand that, you know, people might be in their comfort zone. And another thing, another reason might be that you only teach highly advanced students. And I know there's plenty of teachers, particularly at university and conservatory level, who have a Steinway and that's it in their studio. They teach with the piano and they teach with the music and they teach classically, and that's all they do. And look, if you've got students who are preparing for a concert career, then totally fine. That's what they need if they're going to be doing that. But you know, 99% of students aren't going to make a career on the concert platform. So I'd be saying, even to teachers of very advanced students, if you're not giving your students the skills they need to do more than just read written music, then I think you're doing them a disservice as much as you would be a beginner. And I think one of the big reasons that teachers can be sort of a little bit worried or, you know, apathetic about making change is that there's actually no mandate to do it. It's a bit like getting your driver's license. Once you've got it, there's no need for further training. You pay your little fee every year or every 10 years, whatever it is in your jurisdiction, and you keep your license. You don't have to be retrained. It's easy to get complacent, isn't it? Do your training and kind of teach forever, or even not do too much training and teach forever too. There's not many external motivators for change. Classroom teachers have to do PD. For example, I'm registered with the Victorian Institute of Teaching, and we have to do, I think it's 50 hours of PD every few years. I can't remember how many, what it actually is, because I do so much of it, I've never had to really worry about it. But we have to do a set number of PD hours, professional development that is. So going on courses and training can be inside the school or out. We have to do a set amount of that every single year in order to stay registered. Think about pilots. I mean, pilots have to go through strict, serious flight simulator training every however often. I'm not even sure what it is, but I'm sure it'll be pretty regular. And doctors, I mean, imagine if doctors who were trained 30 years ago never kept up with current research. I mean, they'd be still mistreating lots of diseases. They wouldn't know about half the drugs on the market. And in actual fact, I've got a friend at the moment who's in the early stages of pregnancy, and she went to her doctor asking for a particular test that she'd read about and heard about from other friends. It was quite well known, apparently. And the doctor said, what test? I've never heard of it. And it wasn't an obscure test by any means. And he had to go online and Google it and find out about it. And he kind of said, oh, yeah, if you want to do that, we could do it. I mean, how much faith do you put in a GP who kind of treats your symptoms and things like that? I'd worry about that. And while we're not sort of facing life and death sort of situations in the piano teaching studio, hopefully, it's still you still want to keep current and know what's going on out there, know what is best for students. You know, is teaching Every Good Boy Deserves Fruit and FACE and all that stuff the best way in the 21st century to teach notation? I say 100% no, it's not. Now, and there's reasons for that, and maybe that could be a future podcast. There are many better ways of doing it, in my opinion. But how are teachers going to know that unless they listen to a podcast like this or do some research themselves? There is no way. So again, that's why I'd be really pushing for it. I think the whole, you know, the doctor and the person coming in for a test and them not knowing about it is a little bit like the piano student who comes into a lesson wanting to play a particular piece or use a particular app and the teacher going, oh, I've never heard of that. I don't know what it is. So let's, you know, we'll just get back to the method book sort of thing. I think it's, you know, missing so much of an opportunity there to engage with students and try something new that's going to freshen up and live in the studio. And, you know, you can have a laugh because you might do something wrong and kids have a laugh and they're enjoying themselves. So, you know, being confident with teaching techniques comes with a bit of practice and being open to make some mistakes. I talked about this actually in my Teaching Pop Piano course, where one of the videos was all about, you know, what do you do when a student comes in and says, I want to play this, and it's, you know, you've never seen it or heard it, and it's almost unreadable. What do you do? That's what one of my videos is on. If you're interested in that, we'll put a link in the show notes to my PianoFlix teaching pop piano training. And the Curious Piano Teachers, if you haven't heard of these guys, in the UK, they have some fantastic blog articles out. They had a blog article just last week called "What is the Legal Minimum Requirement for Piano Teachers Professional Development?" And then in that, they were talking about Pilates teachers, because one of them does Pilates. Pilates teachers have to gain 100 points for attending courses. So some points are 30, some are 20, and it's an ongoing process that everyone's involved in. Sounds like a pretty good idea to me, I have to say. Now, Amanda Smith recently wrote a post on my blog called 5 Steps to Avoiding a Piano Teaching Rut. And she gave 5 great tips there about keeping fresh and interested, because we know that teaching in isolation can be draining. And that's why I think for some people, teaching in school-based environments or small music schools can actually be much more sort of fulfilling and motivating, because you're around other people doing the same thing. Having taught, you know, in a studio myself, I know that, you know, you're just there with the kids or with parents sometimes, and you can feel quite cut off, which is another reason, I guess, that I really push keeping on forums and websites and things to just keep connected with other people. When it comes to, you know, keeping current and trying new things, I personally don't know why people would not want to improve what they do. I mean, to think that you would start working in any industry and be comfortable just doing the work at the level at which you started it's very mediocre, obviously, but it sounds a bit depressing to me, really. You know, I always want to try and try new things and push the boundaries of what I know. Just today, in fact, this week, I was really looking into a new app, which I'm going to blog about soon, which provides very, very funky backing tracks for scales. And the kids totally love this thing. I'm going to share it all with you very soon. One of the other things it did is led into improvising. And we started improvising with some of the kids and working on the chord progressions of the actual backing tracks of this app. And it was really, really cool. So things like that, I've just had fun. And the kids, you just see them, they're playing this C major scale, which they've done a million times, to this funky backing track. And they've got this biggest smile on their face. And, you know, I'm grooving along with it too. So things like that, you know, it can be so, so affirming for everyone, the kids and the teachers, when we try new things. So look, I love learning, and I hope all you guys do too. It's why I do this blog. It's why I read and write and record videos. And, you know, I've always got about 5 books on the go on my Kindle. I guess I've always had that kind of entrepreneurial and slight risk-taking spirit. You know, I like kind of just jumping in and going, you know what, I don't care what happens here. I'm just going to try something new. It could end in a bit of an epic fail, as things do. But you know what, that's okay. And my students, I think, know now that they can kind of expect that they're going to be trying new things in my lessons. And that's kind of a cool way to be. And I guess I love reading and researching in all industries. I read and research a lot about how I run my blog and how I do videos and all that kind of stuff. And I want to get better at that too, as well as my teaching. So, you know, it all adds up. You know, I want to get better as a cyclist. I'm a road cyclist. I love going on long rides. I want to get better at doing that, so I can go and have a little bit of coaching on how my cadence works and, you know, how fast I should be pedaling and things like that. If you're a swimmer or you go to the gym, get a personal trainer, learn how to do things better and properly and more efficiently and that sort of thing. I think it's just so, so important in life. Going back to the Curious Piano Teachers, their blog post about professional development, I think it was Sally that was writing, gave 3 great reasons why professional development is important. And I'll leave a link to their show note, their blog post in the show notes. The 3 things that she said was, why should we do it? Well, 1, it refreshes us. 2, it restores us. And 3, it allows us to reflect. And I think those 3 words, refresh, restore, and reflect, are so, so important. And so it's not just all about learning a new thing and then trying it out on kids. It's actually about reflecting and thinking about how that went and then thinking, can we improve it even further? So what motivates you, or are you struggling right now? You know, consider the story I told at the beginning. What would it take you to challenge yourself to get better if you don't do this regularly? And if you're already trying new things, how could you make it a more regular part of your week? Elisa Milne, one of my great friends from Sydney, talked about this in an article that I've linked to on my blog called The Blessing of Professional Development Tithing. And in this, I'll quote Elisa because she writes brilliantly here. If we as teachers are not engaging in our own learning and development, then we are not just stagnating, we are contributing to having our knowledge shrink and our fluency as professionals slow. Our fires burn lower as we fail to tend to our own need to learn, and our teaching suffers as we have less and less experience outside our own four walls upon which to draw. Hear, hear, Elisa, and I hope lots more people now, since you wrote that article originally, have been taking on board your idea. And that is the idea of making professional development a regular part of your week, or at least your month in time. So think about, you know, if you're in a highly competitive area and you were losing a student per week to another teacher who opened up next door and was perhaps a little bit more current and tech savvy and stuff, would that give you a bit more motivation? What if the rules suddenly changed and you had to be accredited to teach piano? Would you make that effort to go through the accreditation course, explore new methods and teaching procedures and have your own teaching assessed? And what if you moved cities and had to start over? Now, there's a lot of my readers who have done that over time, and it's a really challenging thing to do. But I tell you what, it gets you motivated to challenge your thinking and learn marketing and all that kind of stuff. So I think there's a couple of things just to take away today. I'm going to wrap it up now. And I hope you've enjoyed this short discussion about motivation. I think one of the things we should also remember is one of the best things about piano teaching is that ultimately we should remember that the kids don't actually know what's good or bad. So you can try things out. Now, I love this concept because, you know, I've taught as a classroom teacher, and when you're in a classroom of 30 kids or however many it is, it's much harder to try new things if you're not sure how it's going to go, because you don't know whether you're going to lose the whole class and it end up in a big disaster, right? But when you're one-on-one and you want to try a new way of teaching music reading, for example, you can do it. You've got actually nothing to lose by trying something new. Maybe you've got a new app to try. Pick one student and one app, give it a shot, see what happens. It's almost like a safe test lab for pedagogy if you use it in that way. So I guess some action steps for today. One, have a think about what motivates you to be listening to this podcast and why you do that. And how, if you don't already, you could make it a more regular part of your routine. Not just listening to my podcast, obviously, but how you can make professional development a regular part of your routine. And another step that I'd love for you to take this week is to take, you know, an idea, just one idea that you've read about on the blog or you've heard about on the podcast, and try it out with a student in the next week, or try it out in your studio. Maybe it's the idea of setting up a new recital, as we talked about with Kristen Yost. Or maybe it's about setting up your website, like we talked about with Joy Morin in a previous episode. Maybe it's about improvising, like we talked to Daniel McFarlane about in episode one, I think. Or what Christopher Norton was talking about in episode two when it comes to improvising. You know, take one idea from those podcasts or blog posts on my site and try it out with a student and see just how motivating it can be. Guys, thank you so much for listening to this episode. I hope you've got something out of it. And if you feel that I was talking to you and you already knew most of what I was saying and you're already pretty motivated to get busy with the professional development, then please share this with some people you know who might benefit from hearing it. It's pretty easy to do. If you're on my webpage, just find the sharing links on the left-hand side of the page. Or if you're on YouTube, you can send someone the link to it pretty easily with the buttons underneath the video. So thank you very much again for listening. Wherever you are, in the gym, in the car, on your bike, wherever it is, or whether you're watching this on YouTube. Thank you again for tuning in. I really do appreciate it. And until next time, happy teaching. I'll see you soon.